Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, we're discussing the topic of diversity and inclusion. As we look ahead to 2022 and also following on from our recent diversity and inclusion webinar, the link to which will be in the show notes, we're chatting about why and how organizations can become truly inclusive employers. And to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by the wonderful Jeanne McDonagh, CEO of the Open Doors Initiative, an organization which works with a large number of companies and NGOs to help marginalized people, such as refugees, asylum seekers, people with disabilities, and youth from disadvantaged backgrounds, find employment. Thanks for joining us, Jeanne. How are you?
Good, thank you. My cat is coming to the computer, so I warn you, some unusual sounds may emit.
An extra special guest. Brilliant. And of course, we're also joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary, how are you?
Great to have you here, Jeanne. And I have a dog who every now and then goes into a fit of barking. So we might have fun today on this podcast.
Brilliant. So before it all kind of kicks off, I suppose we'll jump right in. I'll come to yourself first, Jeanne, if that's okay. So I suppose, look, diversity and inclusion, it's a wide-ranging topic, very deep topic, lots of facets to it. And it's been on the minds of organizations, HR teams for quite some time now, which is brilliant. I suppose, can you start us off with your definition of diversity and inclusion?
Sure. And it comes from a few different sources, but diversity to me simply means allowing for and embracing difference. And it's all about positive differences, which are seen and unseen. So inclusion is diversity in action. And that's about creating an environment where people are valued and feel valued and are able to achieve and contribute to their full potential. So an inclusive environment improves interaction with employees, customers, the wider community. It also creates a competitive advantage. And it has a very positive effect on your organization. There are countless studies which show that a diverse workforce is better for potential employees, current employees, and the business as a whole, with the real injection of creative and lateral thinking.
Fantastic. And I think, I suppose, diversity and inclusion, it goes far beyond just the right thing to do as well, Jeanne, doesn't it, I suppose? Can you tell us why you should be an inclusive employer, just kind of building, I suppose, on what you opened with there?
Sure. So more diverse companies tend to be more innovative. You've workers who really give it their all and are better at solving problems. And the Harvard Business Review had a stat that showed that ethically diverse companies are 35% more likely to outperform competitors. So that's very compelling in its own right. And that's only in one particular area. As well as that, the talent pool is shrinking. Every organization is competing for the same talent. And just to use the public appointment service as a good example, they're taking huge strides in creating a recruitment service for government, which aligns with the values potential employees have. And this should be learned from and mirrored, especially in the private sector. Because recruiters, they're the gatekeepers to employment for many. And you influence employers' decisions and you can be a real ally to potential employees coming through who are there on merit. And you know that influence of leadership is where change starts. So there's a couple of practical things you can do. You can choose where you advertise vacancies. So go to diverse outlets and media where the communities are. Don't just put it in the generic job searches. And it has to be measurable. So you need to reflect the way society is currently. For example, according to the last census, 1 in 8 people in Ireland were from a migrant background, but you don't see that coming through the talent pool. So you need to use your influence to affect that change, and you, by doing so, influence other employers in the sector. And at present, I don't think recruitment is an accurate reflection of Irish society as it now stands. And if you think about it, can you count on one hand how many of your colleagues are from another country? How many have a disability visible or disclosed, or from a different socioeconomic background? And that should be the norm, not noticeable. And I think that's really important, because there's so many practical examples, for example, in the area of disability, where there's been environmental changes which benefit all, captioning on Zoom and seminars, braille markings on shampoo bottles, ramps, public service announcements, auditory loops. So all of those things benefit all of society. And it's not that we're catering to niche sectors, but we have to take an inclusive approach and apply those learnings to help all. So it's not tokenism. And as recruitment professionals, you influence the top table, and that has a ripple effect across society. And you help to shape and influence those societal conversations. So it's really important, the work you do, and it has to be a constant work in progress. And many new employees, they want to work for companies that align with the UN SDGs and with the 9 pillars for inclusion, and to work with companies who have strategies around sustainability and diversity. And it's a key motivator for recruitment and employee engagement. And it also applies to external participants of the country, of the company, sorry, and of the country, actually, when you think about it. You know, your supply chain, your board, your customers, government, competitors. And you could do very simple things like bringing in procurement contracts, which are values driven. And we're seeing a lot more of that happening with the companies we work with. And that's one small, simple change, but it's very effective, because it then causes the company to magnify the work it's doing and amplify it in the diversity and inclusion sector. And then just a few more quick fixes: mentoring and champions within a business, so important in terms of educating the existing workforce and involving them in supporting their peers and making everyone feel welcome in the space, and allyship and stories of lived experience, because they really matter and they really make change, as we saw with marriage equality. And it helps people understand and get informed. And perhaps really importantly is proactive leadership. It has to come from the top, and leadership needs to raise awareness with employees at all levels and begin conversations about how to be inclusive and encourage training and education on bias, on stigma, and remove any preconceptions we have about groups who are othered. And I think for all organizations, you have to think long. You have to think about what legacy your organization and its current employees and its future employees will leave. And, you know, we need to hire people who don't mirror us, but who bring difference to the table. So sorry, that was a very long answer to your question.
Oh, definitely. Look, and it sounds like there's lots of stuff that we can do, and lots more things that we can do also as well. I suppose kind of just as a foundation for yourself, Mary, I might come to you for this one. I suppose Jan kind of alluded to it there, that there is some challenges that remain. And I think we do still see even, I suppose, grievances, cases appearing in front of the courts. I suppose there is also a legal foundation to this, isn't there, Mary? I suppose with the that kind of props up the whole strategic piece as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got the Employment Equality Act from 1998 to 2015, and that prohibits discrimination under the 9 grounds in employment. And that would, I suppose, cover everything from advertising, like Jan says, you know, do we really think about where we're advertising a vacancy so that we're not excluding groups of people, or being creative about how we do it in terms of equal pay, in terms of access to employment, in terms of vocational training and work experience, your terms and conditions of employment, which are so important, your promotion of people or your regrading of people, you know, your collective agreements, how you're treating people in terms of, you know, having them within your organization. And it even comes down, I guess, when you say we see cases coming through to the WRC. Yes, we do. They're typically around dismissal. And they can, I guess, often be for people who are protected under those 9 grounds. And so from our perspective as a HR consultancy, we have a specialist workplace investigations division of the consultancy, and an awful lot of our work in that area is investigating complaints around discrimination and unfavorable treatment experienced by one person in an organization by virtue of being part of one of those 9 protected grounds. So although there's legislation there, although you have organizations like the WRC there, it still goes on, let's be honest. Every day of the week, there are challenges and issues around these areas. And while diversity and inclusion is something that a lot of organizations are talking about now, we're still seeing these kind of cases creeping through. And you're still seeing them published and talked about in terms of the unfair treatment of individuals in the workplace. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I agree with you, Jan, when you talk about leadership. I think it's just so important that senior leaders are engaging at this level, not just to avoid litigation, that's a consequence for an organization that gets this wrong, but to, you know, ensure that people are treated fairly and equitably, and that you're open to that diversity that's so important, and that can give you that competitive advantage if you're working through your organization properly. So there is a challenge for HR people to, you know, bring to life diversity and inclusion and actually really make it meaningful within their organizations, not just something that's a tick box.
Absolutely. And I think, I suppose, kind of building on that as well, so, and I'll come to yourself for this one, Jan, I suppose diversity and inclusion has been something that's been around for quite a long time, I suppose, as an agenda item, which is fantastic. But as we said there, there's still issues appearing. We're still not quite there. And although we can never, I suppose, strive for perfection, what do we think is missing in the whole, I suppose, current strategy and the current outlook for diversity and inclusion in Irish workplaces?
Well, I guess you've got to look at societal change, which is moving at great speed. And as a society, we are changing fundamentally. And employers and employees must be part of that change and reflect that change in a positive sense. So if organizations are microcosms of that society, they have to reflect it in all that they do and the people they hire. And if, as I was making the point earlier, if people are the mirror of each other, there's the sameness of thought and change and innovation won't happen or be handled well. There needs to be diversity of thought, and that needs to be informed by diversity itself. So it has to be a person-centered approach. You almost need to walk in the shoes of the other person and see the barriers they face, despite the skills they may have and the ability to do the job. And these people also need to be at the decision-making table and inputting into all structures and systems to ensure, as Mary said, an equitable process. And it can be really important as well in terms of sustainable reputation management for the organizations you're guardians of. It has to be a truly held value, not a tick box. And you need to lead your clients and your customers and your supply chains with all those inputs from society. And it cannot be tokenism, but it has to be hiring on merit. And there's so many people out there who are very highly skilled and very highly trained, and they just don't have the opportunities that others have to create an equitable situation where they can thrive and strive to do their best for a company. So I think that's something we need to think about. What are the barriers that people face, and how do we help them overcome them? And I'm not saying give them a leg up for the sake of it, but just to make it equal, that's all.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Jan and Owen, you know, if you look at HR managers in Ireland themselves, it's probably pretty much a homogenous kind of group in itself. And I guess it takes that little bit of openness from their own perspective to ensure that there is that difference coming through too. Because if you look at the majority of HR people are female in the profession. Now, there are men there too, but they are a minority, but they tend to be more senior. And they tend to be in those head HR roles more easily than your female equivalents. And it's interesting, I think, in a profession that's responsible in large part for hiring, that actually it's very much a homogenous group in itself.
Mm-hmm. I suppose kind of linked to that, Mary, I suppose it's, my question really is what, whose responsibility is the D&I agenda? I suppose it's, you're saying there, and as Shan has both has also said, obviously recruitment plays a part, that kind of thing, and HR does tend to drive these kind of strategies. But I assume maybe the book doesn't really stop there. This tends to be, for real success in this area, it needs to be more of a top-down approach, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was really struck when we spoke to Brendan Hearn from Clearstream on one of our earlier podcasts, which you might put in the show notes on, but he talked about having a very senior board member within Clearstream who was driving the diversity and inclusion agenda at Clearstream, and talking about how important that support was, and that he in HR was particularly interested in that area and had decided to, as something extra that he was doing, become involved in it. I believe it's an organization-wide strategy, but in order to have success, I think you very much have to have that clear top leader sponsorship. Without it, it's very, very hard to implement right across the organization. And I think also there is a little bit of fear out there, you know, in terms of the wider body. You know, why do these initiatives fail, or why don't they get off the ground despite the good intention of the people involved or the good intentions of the workforce? And I think sometimes it is about fear of saying the wrong thing, fear of appearing to be confrontational, you know, all of those kind of things feature when it comes to diversity and inclusion. And in order for it to work, we have to be able to have real conversations and meaningful conversations right across the organization, from the most senior levels down to the most junior levels.
And that's why it's so important to have the education and the training piece in place.
Yeah.
Because unless you're informed, you're making assumptions and you're not reacting. Well, you are reacting, but you're not acting on the basis of lived experience. You're not acting in a person-centered way. You're not listening to the people who actually are experiencing whatever it is, whatever the barriers are, the lack is, or the inability to get into an organization. And if you're doing that, it's not a holistic approach, and it's not an informed approach, and it will have negative consequences. And, you know, there is that fear. People aren't for example, disability confident or culturally aware in all aspects. And I think Black Lives Matter really showed that. And now a lot more people are having the conversations and talking to people and learning from them and getting informed. And I think that's the basis. I mean, you wouldn't go into your workplace and assume knowledge unless you had done the homework and you had that sort of, you'd built it up over time. You wouldn't just walk into a job in, I don't know, director of, and without that experience and knowledge. And the same with D&I, you have to build up your resources. You have to get the training. Your employees need to be trained and made aware. And it needs to become second nature to the organization. It needs to permeate every aspect of the organization and what you do. You nearly need to put a D&I lens on everything you do for it to become a truly held value and an ingrained value and something that comes naturally to you. And the best way, in my experience, is to talk to people who are living it and be guided by them. And also to let your employees be informed and knowledgeable about these different areas as well. So they will be more welcoming to people who do come into the organization. And there won't be that othering that sometimes can occur. And that's very important. It should be a safe space. All organizations should be a safe space for all people and allow them to give their best and have career progression and so on. So it's not even just entry-level jobs. It's right through the organization. And that's really important as well.
And that's a good point you made there, Jeanne, about, I suppose, kind of societal factors as well. Obviously, there was a groundswell, really, I suppose, in the area of D&I back in, I think it was 2019, around the Black Lives Matter movement, that kind of thing. It gave, I suppose, the agenda some really good exposure, that kind of thing. I suppose my next question is more related to what came afterwards, the pandemic. I suppose it's hard to talk about any kind of HR topic or any topic at all without speaking about the pandemic over the past couple of years. So I suppose my question, Jen, is how has the pandemic kind of affected the D&I strategy, the D&I agenda? Has it opened new opportunities or has it kind of fallen back in the priorities, I suppose, because of the whole madness we've had over the past couple of years? Is there anything you've seen, I suppose?
Well, certainly not in our experience. It's quite the opposite. For ourselves, the Open Doors Initiative started the day before. It went standalone the day before the first lockdown. So we never signed a lease. We've always been totally remote. We have employees in Mayo. We have people spread around Dublin. And this works really well for us. And it means we can hire people from all over the country who don't need to worry about transport, about clothing issues, about accessibility, about the costs of being in work, be it lunch, be it socializing, all those hidden costs that can make it quite difficult for people from marginalized backgrounds. So it opens up opportunities to them on merit as well. And we certainly found with our company members who are all very inclusive and take a pledge to be and truly live it. The work has grown. We helped over 14,500 people last year alone, despite COVID. And this is really phenomenal when you think about all the other issues those companies were facing at the time. But they absolutely doubled down on their efforts and made sure no one was overlooked where they could offer help. And it's a real testimony to their work that so much got done remotely. And even that issues such as the digital divide were noted and tackled where possible because so many people fell off the grid because they don't have access to computers or a quiet space or all the various things that we all take for granted. So I have to say we noticed an upsurge, which is great.
That's fantastic to hear, isn't it? I suppose because it's been, I suppose we pictured it as such a challenging year full of kind of negative connotations and obviously the stress that it brought. But when you hear things like that, there's obviously some great positives that have come out of it. So that's fantastic to hear, and we're delighted with that. I suppose, Mary, then, I suppose from a HR perspective and bringing it back to, I suppose, any HR teams that might be planning for next year and what they can do next or trying to to catch up on the good work that other organizations are doing. I suppose, what do you think are the main kind of challenges that HR teams will face, I suppose, when they're implementing D&I strategies? Or do you have any, I suppose, kind of tips on how they can really get it off the ground, Mary?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it comes back to what Jan has said, you know, look towards your diverse talent pool, and that starts with recruitment and selection. So, you know, again, when you're shortlisting or when you're advertising, you know, watch out for those kind of things that you might typically do, like put all non-English speaking people out of the process right at the start. So many HR people do that without ever letting somebody through to an interview. So, you know, diversity starts there. What are we doing? It's useful to look at the 9 protected grounds and think, well, what are we doing in each of those areas, rather than let's just pick one particular topic, like, for instance, Black Lives Matter. You know, there's a number of areas that you can look at and check that you're working in all of those areas from a diversity and inclusion perspective. Make sure that you're aligning your diversity and inclusion strategies to your business objectives, because if you're not, then it's very difficult to get senior leader buy-in. I think it's that shared leadership of diversity and inclusion needs to be there. It's not a HR owned project. It might be HR led initiative, but you know, getting people on board at all levels in the organization, you know, will bring a richer grouping of people together. Make sure that you're listening and gathering and, you know, I suppose doing your research, whether that's internal or external, so that you know where you are at a baseline. I think that's very important. Measure and evaluate everything you're doing. And, you know, communication and trust is key. You know, and I say it all the time on this podcast, without trust throughout the organization, people, you know, may not take what you're doing seriously in the first place. So you've got to open up those conversations and make sure that, you know, people, I know one of the things I hear from people often are, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to say the wrong thing about a particular group of people, and, you know, in some way be considered to be, you know, undermining the person or the individuals concerned. And I think as an organization, it comes back down to that training and that development and to open up those discussions and talk about language and all of those kind of things. So awareness is important, education is important, and that starts senior level all the way down throughout the organization. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, Jan. Probably lots.
Well, I guess any change starts with small steps and brave leaders and allies. And I think what's important to all of us is you want to look back in your career and say, I made a difference and I was part of that change, however that manifests itself. So this is all an ongoing conversation. It's evolving, it's changing, but it does require actions to make it happen. There's no point in just talking about it. You have to act on it. You have to do something tangible and different to make change happen. So I guess that's one thing I'd say, is you really need to consider how you can make an impact in a beneficial way and in a positive way, and work on it and put it into action. But I think HR is a very, very strong place to start, because you have such an effect on the very look and shape of any organization, any company, and its values and the people within. So you've a key role, so use it to make a change.
Absolutely. So I suppose great work being done by organizations such as the Open Doors Initiative, Jan, and we've seen it from a lot of employers around the country, some a lot of good stuff being done, but obviously a lot more to do as well. So thank you, Mary and Jan, for a very insightful discussion. It's important to have these conversations. So I'm glad we're having a conversation like this. So thank you to everyone else for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So do make sure to click subscribe, join discussion on our social media channels and all that good stuff. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Jan. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.